Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This is Hot Takes on a Plate, the podcast that explores the things that make you feel and how those feelings collide with food. I'm Rob Petrone, and today I'm feeling angry. I wasn't actually even supposed to record a podcast this week. If you're a regular listener, you know that the podcast was a weekly podcast. In the new year, I shifted it to an every other week setup for a plethora of reasons. But, oh man, starting about late last week, I just have been really feeling angry about how food has been colliding with safety in a few different instances. It started last Friday when I saw that here in New York, Governor Cuomo was going to be opening indoor dining at 25% on, of all days, one of the busiest days in the restaurant world, Valentine's Day, coincidentally, or maybe not coincidentally, at 25% capacity. And there's a lot to get into on that I'm going to save for a little later. And then this morning I woke up and I saw that 30% of Americans plan on attending a Super Bowl party during a raging pandemic. So they're going to stuff their faces with wings and pizza, maskless indoors with a bunch of people that are not in their household. Great idea. And then sandwiched between all of that over the weekend, non-COVID related, but health related, Bon Appetit released a video showing people how they could at home can seafood, telling people that safety is sexy when you're making things that are shelf stable. One problem, what they showed people was not safe and could lead to botulism. So here under this whole umbrella of stuff, we've got food and potentially death. And joining me to discuss all of this, the Grim Reaper of food. I'm just kidding. He's a self-described food antagonist, my friend Joe Rosenthal. You can find him at @Joe_Rosenthal on Instagram. He's a great follow. He breaks news or amplifies news in ways that a lot of old school media outlets take a little longer to do. So, Joe, thank you for joining me once again. Last time we talked on this podcast, it was about squirrel and moldy jam, and it was actually the most listened to episode of this podcast ever. So let's see if we could do it again.
well, thanks for having me again. Yeah, it's weird that I'm the I guess the foodborne illness guy now. don't know how that happened, but here I am.
All right, so let's talk about first the you've been very, very hot on this Bon Appetit canning seafood video story. So for those who don't know, let's give a quick summary of what happened and then we could really delve into the details.
Yeah. So I believe it was last Thursday, Bon Appetit posted a video of It's Alive about canning seafood. And it featured Brad Leone and Charlotte Langley of Scout Canning in Canada. And in the video, they can all sorts of seafood. Some of the just the kind of important beats, butter poached lobster is one of the things. There was a mention of fresh garlic versus powder garlic. And at no point was, you know, botulism raised as a concern. The methodology used for canning was something that could you know, promote the spores that create the toxin that causes botulism. You need to pressure can seafood. You cannot safely can dairy in a home setting.
They were not pressure canning. They were doing things in a water bath. Is that correct?
They used a Bon Marie, and you know, you go on. Yeah. You talk about canning on social media, and you've got three Christs in your DMs about, you know, what is what. But you know, generously, it was water bath canning, and that's not sufficient. Those are not sufficient temperatures for pressure canning. My Instagram story highlight gets into why that is. You know, from like a pressure perspective and a thermal perspective, but essentially, yeah, it's not hot enough for a low acid environment to avoid botulism risk. And in general, the consensus is that dairy is not safe to can at home, period. So butter poached lobster, no-go. The topic of fresh garlic versus garlic powder was brought up. Brad Leone asked, you know, what about, you know, fresh versus powdered? And Langley said, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, fresh garlic, you know, it is a botulism risk to can that without, you know, the right, you know, acid or pressure canning.
So when you're canning something, the idea is you're making it shelf stable. You're making it so that it can sit in your cabinet, doesn't need to be refrigerated. It could be there for months, even sometimes years, and it's safe. And obviously the whole process of canning involves killing the things that could kill you, killing bacteria. And to do all of that, you have to do it at a high temperature, at a certain temperature, which they weren't doing in the video. And they even acknowledged they weren't doing it in the video. But the acknowledgement was a little confusing, was it not?
Well, let me just say to start, I am not a canning expert. And before you can anything, you should read, you know, the documents. I linked to all of them in my BA/botulism highlight on my Instagram. Go to good canning sources, period. Okay. In the video, at one point, Brad Leone takes a can that they had put in their water bath, opens it up, temps it, and announces that it's 190 degrees Fahrenheit. And Charlotte Langley says, that's a great range. That's a great range for a shorter term shelf stable product. And the fact is there's in canning, as far as I understand it, there's no concept of shorter term shelf stable. It's like you said, shelf stable, or it's not canned.
It's Russian roulette.
There's no half measures in canning. And, you know, it seemed like she explicitly said that that was a great range for a shelf stable product, but 190 Fahrenheit isn't even boiling at sea level atmosphere. And the fact is boiling is not sufficient for averting botulism. Pressure canning is needed because it can let you cook the stuff 240 Fahrenheit, 250 Fahrenheit. You know, these temperatures that you actually need to avoid these problems.
And let's just hit on botulism for a second. Botulism is not, you know, just a simple food poisoning. It could kill you.
Yeah, my understanding, I believe there's a link to an article from Harvard. It's Harvard Medical School in one of my botulism highlights. There's so many at this point, it's chaotic, but I swear it's in one of them. And it said that most people, if untreated, would die from botulism. And I think, you know, in this is dangerous, period, you know, flat out. But, you know, in the state of the pandemic, I've had, you know, a situation where it's like, should I go to the hospital? You know, it wasn't COVID. It was clearly something different. But it's like, should I go right now when the hospitals are, you know, in this state and I'm taking up space, like for something that may not be serious? And I think, you know, with botulism, I don't know. It could be more dangerous. And at the very least, you know, it's straining an already seriously stressed system.
So we've established that what was put out by Bon Appetit was dangerous and hurt people. And yes, they removed the video. Issued, it was kind of like a sliding scale of apologies. Initially the video was not removed, but there was an explainer added to it, and then pressure from yourself and others kind of mounted, and then the video was removed. And I know Brad put something in his Instagram stories, which only lasts for 24 hours, giving his mea culpa. And and then of course the canning company, Scout Canning, which the chef who was with Brad, the expert, is a part of, you know, they kept promoting the video after the fact that it was pointed out that it was dangerous, and then did their mea culpa, I guess, you know. But they kind of blamed Bon Appetit's editorial process, saying that the safety parts were cut. And again, this was a video where they said safety is sexy. Like, that was part of the video.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I did not do justice to what the situation is. The video started out with this, you know, spiel about safety and how if they don't accomplish anything but convey, you know, proper safety methods, then they've succeeded. They had a little thing where they were like, safety is sexy. And Brad takes his finger across his chest and there's like a graphic and everything.
It was
and
very it, you cute. Know, a, very cute.
I started out thinking, cool, I agree. Safety is important. But, you know, the statements, Scout Canning blamed the editing, but the statements in that video, I think, stand alone as problematic statements that it would be very hard to misconstrue those statements through editing. At the very least, they were doing butter poached lobster in a water bath, and that's, you know, for two reasons, that's not safe. You, like I said, you can't can dairy at home, and you need pressure canning, you know, for low acid things like seafood. And so, you know, Scout Canning knew that they did that, and they still shared the video. So either, you know, they didn't care that it wasn't safe, or they
there's
didn't know
so many questions. So many questions. I mean, it starts with Bon Appetit. You go, okay, like, who are they hiring? Because obviously, the editorial process is massively flawed. I mean, look, everybody makes mistakes. I get it. It happens from time to time. But this is like, people are going to Bon Appetit because they look at them as experts. You know, like the average person is like, oh, hi, like this is something I can do at home. And the people who are doing editorial, how like they're missing massive details.
Well, I think it needs to be said that this was the case before with Rappaport, and so yes. Still the case now with Don
it's,
Davis.
It's something that keeps happening.
Those are the editors in chief that have you know run the magazine. The magazine's editorial side is run separately from what's happening on video. Video is you know as far as I know operated by Condé Nast Entertainment.
Yes,
which was really you know a big part of that controversy over the summer with Bon Appetit. You know, because that's where, you know, the pay discrepancies were coming from is Condé Nast Entertainment. And they were kind of leveraging, you know, the fact that these staff members were working for the editorial side of things and then pulling them into videos, but they didn't have like video contracts. So that's a whole other can of worms. But I don't know that. I think this reflects poorly on the magazine, but I don't know that they had any, you know, the editorial side had any say on this.
But here's where I'm going to say, hold up. The video is editorial. Maybe it's not the same people who work at the magazine, but when you are putting out videos under Bon Appetit's brand that are tutorials on how to do something, that is editorial. You are a reputable, a supposedly reputable brand saying this is how to do this, and you're saying safety is sexy, except you don't even seem to know or care what safety is. That's an issue. And it could be ignorance, right? Like some people just don't know what they don't know, but that's the problem. Who is running things there? Who are the people who are producing this where they're producing content that they don't even know what they're talking about?
I think it was a serious failure, and you're right. There needs to be, you know, fact checking on these videos. I just wanted to clarify when people say editorial, I wanted to make it clear. It's not the same. Yeah. That's all I was saying. I think this is a failure. The fact that I had a post about this and my followers had a, you know, basically comment about this until it got removed speaks to an institutional failure at Bon Appetit.
No, totally. And then, you know, the Canon company, I mean, you bring in, okay, look, I hosted a TV show for nearly 10 years about food. I don't know every little thing about food. So what did I do? Yeah. I did what Bon Appetit did here. I would bring in experts to talk about things. So they brought in experts, so-called experts, at this, you know, Scout, this company, and the experts got it all wrong. And so I go, well, like, how can you trust their canning? Like, how could you, like, would you ever buy something from this company if this is what they're promoting?
I think it's a complicated question, right? I think, are you in danger buying their canned foods? I haven't seen any evidence to say that you are. I think, you know, they're not, you know, this isn't being produced in Charlotte Langley's house anymore. That's how it used to be. And you can find old interviews where, you know, she's talking about canning seafood at home and it's good on a shelf for 2 weeks because she doesn't pressure can it. And so, you know, that was problematic back then. But as far as I know now, they're outsourcing production to these reputable, you know, canneries and all that. And I think I've seen no evidence to say that that is not safe. With that said, this is a really bad look for them. And I think there's probably better brands to support right now. They're scapegoating the editor of the video saying that this was edited out, you know, this.
Yeah, but you know what? Here's the thing. Look, I've had editors. Like, I understand that world better than most. Somebody has to sign off on the video. The editor doesn't edit it and just throw it up on the internet. There is somebody in the hierarchy, some kind of executive producer or somebody who has to approve this content before it goes out into the world.
This is not on the BA editor. There were explicit statements made by Scout Canning that were dangerous. And you can, you know, go to my story highlight. It's BA/botulism2. And I highlight all of those. This was not a problem with BA's editor. There was a lot of problems that happened here. I think fact-checking at BA is one of them. I think Scout Canning's apparent incompetence was another major part of it. And I think, to go back to your question, should you support this brand? I think I would go to a brand that isn't scapegoating an editor at Bon Appetit for their incompetence. That's my take.
No, I think that's a pretty good one. And you've been interacting with them, haven't you? You've had some interaction with these parties involved?
Yeah. The CEO of Scout Canning sent me a DM, and my DMs are absolutely crazy. And yesterday I was just, it's the pandemic. I was out of my mind yesterday. I couldn't even deal with that stuff. But, you know, they wanted to talk on the phone. And, you know, the fact is I have basically three questions, and it all comes down to, did Charlotte Langley know this was unsafe, or did she think it was safe? And I don't think, you know, regardless of what the answer is, and there are, you know, there's only two possibilities. That's a dichotomy that it covers the whole gamut of possibilities. Either you thought it was safe or you thought it was unsafe. And I just want to know, did you think it was safe or did you think it was unsafe? And I think it's problematic either way.
Yes.
Because if it was unsafe, if she knew it was unsafe, she knowingly, you know, presented unsafe information. If she thought it was safe, then she doesn't know what the safe information is. And
neither is good.
Neither is good. I want to know what the answer is for that. And if I'm going to list my demands, which I'm taking this opportunity to do so, I want a video from Bon Appetit with Brad Leone speaking to the camera, saying that they fucked up, that they made a mistake, and that the video was unsafe. Because as it stands, what they've done is not sufficient for remedying the damage that they've caused.
I mean, this is the thing. This goes back to this summer, spring, summer, whenever it was. Bon Appetit is really bad at accountability. Like, they are just really, really, really bad at that. It's just not their strength.
Nast.
Yes.
Condé Nast.
Anna Wintour.
I mean, you can look at the New Yorker union situation right now, and it's the same bullshit. Where they're not taking the demands of these unionized workers seriously. And you can check out, you know, there's an Instagram account, you know, New Yorker Employees Union. I don't know what the exact account is, sorry. It's still early over here in Minnesota. You can easily find it by just searching that. And I mean, this is a Condé Nast problem, and I think it's just very typical. And unfortunately, this is hugely dangerous.
But it's interesting to me, this whole thing, because, you know, last time we talked with the squirrel story, you were, you know, I don't think it's fair to say necessarily you even said you didn't necessarily break the squirrel story, but you did a lot of the heavy lifting on the squirrel story before, you know, other people pointed it out, but then you'd went out and kind of did the work of the squirrel story.
Yeah.
So the squirrel story, you know, you got big kind of in part because of you. This one, you know, lots of people noticed this. This was out in the public. It wasn't like you uncovered something, but you did amplify it. And I think what's amazing about those two things, the common thread is that somebody with an Instagram account who is not affiliated with any media outlet, you don't consider yourself a journalist, whatever. I think that what people now consider a journalist is a changing title, but a person who is not affiliated with any kind of media company can just go out there on their own and amplify stories and bring attention to things. Like, you can literally do this on your own now if you are willing to do the work and you're clever enough.
Yeah. Well, to go back to Squirrel, to be clear, two employees talked about the mold in their Instagram stories. Like, that was out
yes,
in the world
yes.
public. Yeah,
so, but it wasn't amplified. I mean, you went out and found more people and kind of really brought light to it. I mean, it's the point, the grander point I'm just trying to make is that there used to be, you know, quote unquote, I guess you could say, gatekeepers. And now the world is changing where you could just be a person with an Instagram account. And look, you started with a modest following of, you know, a couple thousand people. When I think I started following you, now you're over 20,000 because you're doing things that people are interested in.
Yeah. I think with this, you know, one of my followers DM'd me the link to the video. It was like the night that it came out. And I just didn't have the time to watch it then. And I watched it like first thing I woke up, and it was like a holy shit moment. And I think, you know, my audience really responded to it. They were, I think, really just mortified at you know, the potential harm here. And I attribute, you know, the takedown of that video, well, the first, their response and then the takedown, I attribute that to the work of my audience.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there's a parallel between this and, like, I don't want to get too tangential here, but like what we're seeing with like Wall Street Bets and GameStop, it's like individuals, when they can form a community and have a voice, can have an impact now.
Being Home with Hunker is a podcast where we visit with designers, artists, and creatives in the spaces that express and shape their identities, their homes. If you love design and decor, if you're curious about how people live, or if you've been transitioning or transforming your own home, you'll love these honest conversations. Join us weekly at Being Home with Hunker. Visit hunker.com/podcast, where you can find, subscribe, and listen to the show.
And so I want to stay on this topic, though, of safety and food, and shifting now to COVID. You know, the two stories I hit up at the top of the show that I teased, one of them being, look, indoor dining is reopening in a lot of places that it was closed in. New York is going to reopen New York City indoor dining at 25% on Valentine's Day. And so, look, I understand there's, you know, businesses are hurting. I've been frustrated from the beginning that more pressure wasn't put on the government to help out restaurants, because it's basically like, well, we'll let you risk safety to keep you afloat, and we're just going to kind of wash our hands of this. But the really puzzling thing about this particular case is that it doesn't track with other decisions that Cuomo has made about indoor dining at all. So the last time indoor dining was opened, I'm sorry, actually, let me rephrase that. So the average per capita case count in New York City is 64% higher right now than when Cuomo announced his indefinite ban on indoor dining in December. So we are reopening indoor dining here in New York City at a time when the cases are much higher than they were when we closed indoor dining. That doesn't track. It just doesn't. Same with hospitalizations. They're 60% higher now than they were when restaurants were closed in December in New York City. So it doesn't make sense. And now let's throw, okay, so we're talking about cases way higher now than they were when indoor dining was shut. And we have these new strains that are like 50% or whatever more contagious. And it wasn't until just yesterday that Cuomo did an about face and said, well, you know what? Restaurant workers can get vaccinated. They weren't even able to get vaccinated. So he was sending them into the fire, saying that they were not essential, that they couldn't get vaccinated. Now he's saying they can, but there isn't even enough vaccines to go around. So the odds of you going out on Valentine's Day to eat, which, by the way, is the worst night out to eat any year anyway. Only amateurs eat out for Valentine's Day. I'm sorry. It's a shit show, Valentine's Day at a restaurant. But now if you decide to go out to eat on Valentine's Day, your worker, your server, whoever is working in that restaurant, they're not going to be vaccinated. Let's be honest. The odds are against them being vaccinated, and you're putting them at risk, and you're putting yourself at risk. But also, to the average person, it's probably a little confusing because the government is saying it's okay. They're basically saying it's safe when they're doing that.
Yeah. So, well, a lot of thoughts on this.
I know I'm throwing a lot at you there. I got a lot of built-up frustration here.
To come back to Cuomo for a second, Cuomo made a statement on Monday, basically saying that. I don't remember the exact quote, but basically that
I've got it.
It was bullshit to demand that. Oh, you've got it.
Well, okay. Well, this may not be the quote, but this is a quote, my favorite quote. There was a big article in the Times earlier this week about Cuomo's mishandling of things and how a lot of health experts are leaving government right now, the highest levels, because Cuomo didn't take their advice. And he said last week, quote, "When I say experts in air quotes, it sounds like I'm saying I don't really trust the experts," referring to scientific expertise at all levels of government during the pandemic, quote, because I don't. He doesn't trust the experts. Who does that sound like?
I mean, he's a smarter man than Trump, but that's a very low bar. And I think, you know, the fact is that's a horrible quote. And that was not the quote I was thinking of, but that might be also my favorite quote.
Oh, well, he did have a quote too. And I was trying to find it before we logged on and I couldn't find the exact quote, but it was, he was talking about basically like, oh, you want to vaccinate, you know, restaurant workers? Well, who are you taking off the list? And he started as if ranking importance of human beings in their lives.
Yeah. I mean, the quote, let's see. Yeah, it's not worth
It also makes for bad podcasting, Joe, when you're looking things up in silence. Come on, Joe. Come on.
He basically said it was insincere to push for restaurant workers to be vaccinated. And, you know, he suggested who would you take off the list? And I think the fact is, if you can't vaccinate restaurant workers, don't open up restaurants for indoor dining. I don't think it's that hard.
Well, and I mean, let's be honest, 25%. I mean, if so, let's say there was no pandemic and you owned a restaurant and you could only fill your restaurant 25% each day because that's just who came into your restaurant, you'd be out of business. It's not like 25% is going to save restaurants. It's just not. And from the beginning of this, it's made me so mad because, look, this is an industry I really love, and I don't want people to be confused when they hear me speaking like I'm bashing restaurants. I feel bad for the restaurants right now because they are just left without a true lifeline. I mean, I think about we can bail out the auto industry, we can bail out banks, we can bail out airlines, but you know, the restaurant industry that doesn't have the big powerful lobby and, you know, it's low wage workers and, you know, let's be honest, it's a lot of immigrants and it's not as sexy to the powerful people in government. You know, those people can go fend for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I think they do not have a voice that can shift legislation or you know, government action in a way that, you know, landlords seem to be able to here. I don't know. I think really, you know, the only real fix here is for the federal government and the state governments to help out these workers and help out these restaurants.
And then my favorite is the lobbyist here in New York. They're not fighting for the right things. They're just fighting to open up the restaurants, which is just putting the restaurant workers in harm's way. It's like the stupidest thing ever. Like, fight for the right thing, you know? Like, I just, if you're going to have the fight, don't have that fight. Like, you know, I just, with, especially now with, you know, with these newer strains that are more contagious, You know, we don't know how much riskier indoor dining becomes. We just don't. And I just, and then of course, just the symbolism of opening it on Valentine's Day, on that day that is just known as like the big money maker. It feels so shallow. It feels so insincere. It feels like, you know, Cuomo caving to pressure of potential lawsuits. It just contradicts everything he has said over the last year. And when you're sending those mixed signals to people, people can't figure out what's safe. They just can't. You know, and so I'm not even like I think there are people that know what they're doing that probably should be making better decisions. I also think there are people that are legitimately confused when the government's saying indoor dining 25%, go have at it. That is sending a bad signal to the public.
I think it's hard to know what to do when the government is telling you it's okay.
Which is what they're basically doing.
I think by opening up indoor dining at 25%, they are saying it is okay to dine indoors. I don't see how any other message could come across.
But the facts don't back it up. That's the thing. That's what makes it so frustrating. I mean, look, if the numbers came way down, look, we could debate whether that would be a good decision, but you can go, okay, the numbers came way down. They're trying to find a happy medium, whatever. But the numbers, while they are granted going down now from a very high peak right after the holidays, they're still very high. They're not low. And look, they say the biggest risk, and I agree with this, the biggest risk is people going to visit with friends, visit with family, indoors, hang out. And that's what we have to worry about now this weekend with the Super Bowl. And I just, look, I understand it's been a long year. I mean, it's been basically almost a year now. I understand the fatigue of all of this. I understand mentally how draining it can be. I understand how important socialization is. I get all of that. But this is not, you know, summertime, outdoors, backyard. You know, this is indoors, tight quarters, lots of people screaming with their bodily fluids flying out of their mouths as they're screaming at the TV, you know, shared food at a table. I just don't understand. I mean, look, anyone listening, if you're thinking about throwing or attending a Super Bowl party, please don't. Like, there's always next year. I mean, there's just no need.
It's too bad that New York City, well, a lot of areas could do this. You get like a big outdoor stadium, you fill it sparsely and televise the game outdoors.
Yeah. So if you want to mitigate risks, don't do indoor dining, order takeout, order delivery, tip a lot of money. Don't use the delivery apps. Most restaurants now, at least the ones here in New York, if you go straight to their website, they use software that is not DoorDash or Grubhub. That is not, quite frankly, it's not going to charge you an arm and a leg. So you save money, and the restaurant, they save money as well. So again, takeout, delivery, you don't need to go out to dine. You can wait a little longer. It's best for the people who work in the restaurant. It's best for you. You can still spend that money. And again, you don't need to have a Super Bowl party. I know it's disappointing, but this is the number one way this stuff spreads. It's the number one way. And you got to think not just about you, but about other people as well. And of course, don't make any kind of canned seafood that Bon Appetit tells you to make, because we don't want botulism either. That's just another thing we don't need in the mix. Joe, thanks so much for joining us again. It's Joe_Rosenthal on Instagram. I'm gonna have to have you on another time just to talk about your sort of rise in the food world, because I find it fascinating how, on a bigger scale, we kind of touched on it earlier, how an individual now cannot be associated with a media entity, but basically do journalistic type work. I find that so fascinating. Joe, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, happy to come on.
Hot Takes on a Plate is part of the Believe Podcast Network. Check them out at BLEAV.com. You can check me out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Rob Patrone TV. And look, if you're not subscribed already, please subscribe to the show. That way you never miss an episode, especially since we don't do these every week now. So you might forget, out of sight, out of mind. Subscribe. Make sure to also rate the show. 5 stars, of course. That helps me, helps everybody. Until next time, I'm Rob Petrone. Ciao.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.